Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
I think it's no longer just a weird trend for the 2025 Aztecs, 2024-2025 Aztecs. They're not as good a team at home.
No.
At Viejas Arena. They do not play well on their home floor, which is so bizarre. I mean, college basketball inherently comes with giant home court advantages.
Yep.
I mean, the whole metric system is weighted toward, you know, home court. Only a top 30 game is considered a quad one at home because you just have such huge advantages in college basketball playing at home in front of your own crowd, your own facilities, without the travel. And playing on the road is like impossible usually in college basketball. And this year's Aztecs team just flipped that. They're, 7-2 on road and neutral games. They've lost 3 home games already. They've lost 6 the past 5 years combined. And they nearly made it number 4. In fact, it certainly looked like they were careening toward their 4th home loss and one that probably would have knocked them well off even the bubble for the NCAA tournament. A quad 4 hideous home loss to San Jose State last night.
Oh, that would have been, the season then comes down to 4 days in Vegas,
yeah,
in the Mountain West.
Very likely.
You mean Larry Bird and the San Jose State last night? My God.
You know, game starts, and I'm never stunned when the other team comes out, hits a couple of shots.
We are used to that.
Seems to happen every single game, and it happened last night. The kid's name for the San Jose State Spartans was Josh Adugie.
Unreal.
In the first 7 minutes, Adugie scored 16 points on his own.
16 of their 19.
Against one of the best defenses in college basketball. A defense that rarely gives up 16 to anyone for a whole game. Gave up 16 to one kid,
yep,
in 7 minutes. And the rest of his teammates were almost as hot. They could not miss. San Jose State made 9 three-pointers in the first half. San Diego State averages giving up 7 a game for the whole season. And usually they like to keep it to 5 or less is, I think, their goal. 9 in the first half as the Spartans built as many as a 21-point lead. 13 minutes into the game. Aztecs,
yep,
were down 21 points on their home floor. Viejas Arena sounded like a morgue through my television. Everyone was stunned by this. The Aztecs were 14.5 point favorites.
Yeah,
what was going on? Well, it wasn't just San Jose State's hot shooting. The Aztecs looked completely out of sorts offensively.
Was the bowl covered with oil or something? Because every time they touched it, it was like, and it was like a Keystone Cops every time.
There was one. I had to go back in the game log. There was one sequence in the first half where on seven straight trips down the floor, the Aztecs turned the ball over.
Yeah, dude. They had 11 in the first half,
yeah,
right?
They were on pace at one point for 36 turnovers.
Oh, my God.
This is a team that's had like as few as three or four in a game sometimes. They were on pace for 36 turnovers in the first half. And it seemed pretty clear to me what was happening. San Jose State came out both energetic, on fire, making their shots. You know, they were making quick moves. They were passing, distributing the ball well. San Jose State played a good first half. It also then got in the Aztecs' head. They started putting pressure on themselves on offense, knowing, oh, we better be perfect or we're going to fall way behind. Well, you could see them just like hesitating, like they'd shoot an early three and that didn't work, and then they'd have an open three and they'd pass it up and drive.
Dude, I texted you
and turn it over. It's like whatever bad decision they could make on offense, they made it.
You told the story last week of Brian Dutcher being over this with them. He's over you guys launching three-pointers with 20 on the shot clock from 10 feet beyond the arc. He's over it. And in fact, he was so over it, he brought out little dummies and stuck them all over the floor saying, hey, this is where you guys are shooting from. Look at it from my perspective. Look at it from this perspective. You've got to get better shots. You need to get closer shots. You know, work the ball inside, whatever you want to do, but you cannot be chucking these threes from these spots. And, you know, the kids look at it and go, oh, wow, that's bad. And then they did the same thing. Just launching threes, plenty of time left on the shot clock, deep, deep outside of three-point range, and it just went, oh, God, they're panicking. You watch them panic.
So they pulled within 12 at the half, went on a 11-0 run. You know, okay, you know, maybe you can get back into this game. You're at home.
Couple shots, couple stops. You know,
they were down at half?
12.
12, yeah. That's
and
when
I was like,
that's when I called
I was like happy, like, okay, 12. At least it's not 20. It's 12. You can make up 12 and a half. They quickly got it down to 7 to start the second half. And I go, all right, I guess they're going to come back and win this game. And then San Jose State caught fire again. They continued to make threes. They ended up making 15 threes in the game. They increased the lead back to 16 points. And at that point, I just went, all right, it's not happening.
He
it's
was
not,
very dejected.
It's not, it's not their night. It's San Jose State's night. It's not San Diego State's
right
night.
I was right there with them. I mean, they made their run. They were like, okay, you got it. And then you just were like, that was your kind of your last chance. You let San Jose State get up another 6-7 points on you, and it was over.
I texted the guys last night, and I said, well, this game has been terrible. I'm going to bed. And I said, I hope they come back. Ben says, not going to happen. He was very dejected. Paulie said they had a chance. This has L written all over it. Season now comes down to a weekend in Vegas for the Mountain West Conference. And then I woke up this morning at like 1, looked at my phone, and Paulie says, I can't believe this. Ha. Ben says, now go ahead and cover. Woods could be shocked when he wakes up. Aztecs just took a 63-62 lead at this moment, Woodsy. Ben says, I'm awake and I'm shocked. Paul says, one of the craziest games I've ever seen. Holy ass.
I missed all of it. When you went to sleep, literally like 30 seconds later, they were in the lead. It was it was incredible. They just, and you'd say.
I think they used an 18-0 run.
Oh, my God.
And you can say, don't shoot those long threes. Well, they shot them and they made them. Yeah. I mean.
I guess if you shoot them, don't miss
them. Miles Bird, who was missing in the first half, like couldn't find him. He had nothing going in the first half. Became Miles Bird again in the second half.
13 points all in the second half. Nick Boyd had some big moments, 11 points, but 9 rebounds and 5 assists. But the Aztecs do not win that game. They don't even come close to being in that game. Wasn't for Magoon Gwal.
The GOAT.
Saved him in the first half, had 14 points in the first half, finished with 24 and 6 rebounds. Made some threes, you know, himself in the first half, even like a step back one. He looked like.
Feeling it.
He looked like a next level player last night for San Diego State as a freshman. A 7-footer who was all over the court, slam dunks, 3-pointers, rebounds, block shots, doing everything for San Diego State and keeping him in that game.
I'm reading
last night
some of the game notes here. 21-point comeback was the largest overcome to win by the Aztecs in a home game since 96-97 season. They trailed by 16 points in the second half with 12 and a half minutes remaining. 57-41, and then the Aztecs won on a 30-11 run to finish out the game.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
Mm.
So, all right, so So, you know, look at it objectively. Good win, something to be, it's a win. You don't complain about wins, right? You never complain about dubs. We don't do that on this show.
But where do you do. College basketball teams can.
They do. But where do you stand?
Well,
where do you stand
metrically,
on them?
It was a bad win. Yeah. Even though, you know, anyone...
It would have been a horrible loss,
anyone that's an Aztecs fan will take it because the alternative was a horrible loss.
Yeah.
Still a bad win. They dropped from 42nd to 44th in the net. They dropped from 37th to 43rd in the KenPom rankings. Back toward the bubble. They actually probably hurt themselves a little bit with the win, but... Way better than the alternative, which, as Paulie said, was a loss that probably
makes the rest
virtually
of the
eliminates you from at-large contention.
It makes the rest of the season irrelevant.
If you go and win at New Mexico or at Utah State and you beat New Mexico and you win every other game the rest of the way and lose in the conference tournament, maybe. But essentially, it probably puts your fate into a very dicey 3-day stretch in Las Vegas, which you don't want to do. At the end of the season, you just don't want it to come down to having to win 3 games in 3 days. Because no matter how good you are, how well you're playing, how motivated you are, 3 games in 3 days is really. I mean, it's in Vegas for a reason.
Yeah,
it's a crapshoot.
The red unis last night. I saw a lot of people online complaining about the Reds. Paulie said he got a text from a buddy. Said, "Oh no, we're in the Reds. That means this is an L." The only other time they wore the Reds this season, they barely squeaked one out, right?
I believe so. Was it the Air Force game?
I think it was. But you have a stat that surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a history of some bad losses in the Steve Fisher era wearing the red uniform. So it's kind of a doomer feeling about them. I think they're 5-0 now wearing them under Dutch.
Okay, weren't much.
Yeah, it's shocking. It doesn't feel this way, but they are 5-0. Under Brian Dutcher, when wearing the red, 20-5 in their last 25 games while wearing the red.
There's really no statistical basis.
Feels like much ado about nothing.
It feels like they play terribly every time. But
kind of like the Padres on a Friday night in the City Connects.
Yeah.
There was that streak where feels like we didn't win a game for 3 months on a Friday night.
Sunday
camos. Yeah, in the City Connect. It was like, what's happening?
Tiny pet peeve.
Or yeah, maybe it was Sunday.
And this is probably picking... You know, nits here, but I don't like it when the coaches wear the same color as the players.
Why?
You know, well, Brian Dutcher's sitting there in his red pullover that matches the jersey. When you're playing basketball, you're using your peripheral vision. You see red standing there right by the court. You might be inclined to just like toss it over there once during the game and throw it out of bounds.
When's the last time you played basketball?
It's been a while, but I mean, it'd be easy for the coaches to wear black. And then
I mean, the players are wearing the same uniform, and they're waiting in front of the scorers table to check in. Nobody's just passing
it
to the broadcast.
That's true, but it's the coach who's standing right there next to the court that worries me the most.
Coaches go skins.
There you go.
Full skins.
Shirts and skins.
Pull it off, Dutch. Coaching shirtless. Would not be comfortable, I think, for
Is that
Brian
like
Dutch.
The nightmare always shirts? For me, it's shirts and skins. Shirts. I'll take shirts.
Oh, you didn't like shirts. You didn't like doing shirts and skins when you were a kid?
No.
Why?
Because I didn't want to take my shirt off.
How come?
Because, you know.
I've seen you in your
pasty, non-tan torso. My golf tan is really what
I didn't
like to show off.
It's pretty fugly, man.
Yeah.
The golf tan
does not look good.
When I was playing a lot of golf back a couple of years ago during COVID... I mean, I would take my shirt off at home. My wife would recoil, like visibly recoil. The sleeves here, the neck.
You have to put so much. If you're a golfer, and you know, like I do, and I wear short sleeves and shorts, you have to put in a lot of work, like in the beach or the tanning bed, to overcome the golf tan. I don't have the time to go and sit at the beach for 5 hours twice a week to overcome the golf tan.
Have you ever been in a tanning bed?
I've never been in an actual tanning bed.
Just put it on the list, man.
Seems boring.
I've never been in a tanning bed.
Seems really boring.
What? Never?
Well, I live in San Diego. It feels like...
Why are you so white?
Because I don't take my shirt off at the golf course.
I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, where it was just painfully obvious anytime somebody went into a tanning.
Yeah, like, you're not supposed to be tanned.
Bro, we haven't seen the sun in 8 months. Who are you fooling?
Why are you so bronze?
I've never been against it. I've just never thought.
I've fallen asleep in many
Paulie's
a tanning
bed. Paulie's very fair-skinned, though.
He has fair skin.
I'm used to having a tan.
Yeah.
It just doesn't carry all
they
the
give
way.
You, they give you this little Playboy bunny, Ben, a little sticker, right? And you put it on your inner thigh and
to show how
different it is. And so you would see.
Do you have to wear like those dark like glasses?
Just little ones. They just
like little swimmer's goggles. Yeah.
But I would take them off and just keep my eyes closed. And then every now and then, to be a rebel, open my eyes real quick and then shut them.
You'd like to court the eye damage with the tanning bed?
Let's see if this is legit.
Great.
Yeah. I've never done a spray tan. No. I don't think I would either. Get the real orangey vibe, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Right, we got Don't Do This coming up next.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Yankees owner. I mean, what a statement he made in public yesterday and was summarily dragged by one Jeff Passan.
First, I want to tell you about the secret of losing up to a pound of fat every day. It's called SDFatLoss.com. It's a doctor-developed, easy-to-follow weight loss program. You can lose weight fast, naturally, safely, no drugs or injections, no prepackaged meals, bars, shakes, no exercise required. I lost 40 pounds in 60 days when I went through the program. You can do it as well. Lose 10 to 20% of your body weight in just 2 months. It works fast and it's sustainable. I've kept all that weight off. I've never done that before with any other program. This is the one that helped me keep it off because it just changed my patterns and behaviors. I prep my food. It's really easy. Stuff I get at the grocery store, stuff I eat and like, steak, chicken, vegetables, some fish sometimes. It's an easy-to-follow program. And right now, with their New Year's special, you can get $200 off if you sign up before January 31st. Just set up your free consultation by going to sdfatloss.com. Let them take all the guesswork out. It's good if you're a busy, you don't have time for, you know, you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go to an office or everything. You can do it all remotely. So many advantages. And then the benefits for your health, losing weight, looking better, feeling better, sleeping better, less pain. It's all there for you. Give it a try. Go to SDFatLoss.com, set up your free consultation, follow what I did, Scraby, Ello, so many tier ones at SDFatLoss.com.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Don't Do This is brought to you by Trust and Will. Don't leave your entire estate, house, kids, and life savings up to chance if and when you die. Do set up a trust or a will online at trustandwill.com. It's a lot more affordable than you think. Visit trustandwill.com for more info. I'm not going to lie. This story I saw yesterday is dark. I mean, it's Don't Do This, but it's sad and it's shocking. This comes from Colorado, where a 57-year-old man, dad, was watching his son compete at a track meet. He's sitting in the stands, just, you know, cheering on his son, when a terrible accident occurred. They were having the hammer throw, which is, you know, the hammer is the ball, like the ball and chain, and they swing it around and throw it as far as they can.
Yes.
One of the competitors, according to the reports, threw that weighted ball. It's usually 12 pounds.
Oh, my God. Don't do this, Ben.
It cleared all the certified barriers, according to the organizers, and struck Wade Langston in the bleachers.
Oh, my.
First responders from the Colorado Springs Fire Department arrived to provide aid, but he was pronounced dead at the scene. I mean, how does that even happen?
I don't know. Did he, like, really get into one?
I mean,
cleared the barriers.
I mean, it feels like, all right, I mean, like, if you're an Olympic champion,
wow,
like, there shouldn't be any possibility of getting one of those
into the stands,
hammers all the way into the stands.
That's so sad.
I mean, it's just shocking. Yeah, it was high school.
All right, I gotta ask, please tell me it wasn't his.
It wasn't his son.
It wasn't his son, I don't believe, that threw the hammer.
Oh, God.
I don't think so, at least. I think he was watching his son competing in another event. But that's just awful.
I mean,
awful.
I'm sad now.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
This is a little bit more lighthearted, I guess, unless you're
everything
a Yankee
would
fan.
Be compared,
yeah, I mean,
to that.
Unless you're a Yankee fan. Now, if you're a Yankee fan right now, you heard Hal Steinbrenner talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers yesterday, and it is odd to hear. You know, he said, it's difficult for most of us owners to be able to do the kinds of things they're doing. We'll see if it pays off. They still have to have a season relatively injury-free for it to work out for them. They actually don't. They're pretty deep.
Yeah, I don't think they have to be that injury free.
Actually, I think they can lose four or five guys in the starting rotation on day one and still win 110 games. But Jeff Passan, I thought the response to it was pretty great, actually. He said, if the penalties are so tough, then why are the Dodgers and Mets doing it? At the end of the day, these are the New York freaking Yankees. If a luxury tax threshold is holding them back, it says more about where they are as a franchise than it does about the luxury tax itself. When have the Yankees ever played third fiddle in baseball? It's exactly where they are right now when it comes to spending. It's a weird look. And Yankee fans yesterday on Twitter, oh my God. I mean, they, you know, I look, it ain't great right now here in San Diego with ownership. We know that. But they were coming for his head yesterday. And I tend to agree. I mean, I believe somebody tweeted yesterday, Ben, they made $600 million in revenue last year. That's a lot of revenue. That's a substantial amount of revenue for the New York Yankees.
That is a lot of revenue.
The big
Yes Network.
Yeah, I would say, too, like, is brand-wise, that's the biggest brand in the world, maybe,
yeah,
besides,
I mean,
the Dallas Cowboys.
They're usually top two
top
in attendance,
two,
I think, every single year. And, you know, Yankees tickets aren't cheap, and they get all the luxury suites that, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They're making a lot of money.
I would rather my owner lie to me. I would rather my owner, if it was Hal Steinbrenner, say, guys, we're in there. Like, we've signed some guys. We're making some plays. Just nothing. We haven't had any bites yet, so to speak.
Well,
but we absolutely want to spend money.
Well,
you don't have to tell everybody you don't want to spend money.
He said, I believe yesterday, he thinks the Yankees roster is better,
better now
than it was last year with Juan Soto. That seems impossible. How could you lose Juan Soto and then be better the next year?
Right.
It's impossible, right?
Never seen that before.
Never seen that. There's no way a team could lose Juan Soto and then be better the next season without him.
Right.
Or it could happen 2 years in a row. We'll
correct.
See.
Could never happen.
We'll see if that's the case. They did get to a World Series, though, so the bar is
obviously
pretty high.
He was not traded.
No, he was not, but they did not re-sign him, even though they tried. All right, finally, a little doo-doo this, although
DD mega doo-doo.
I mean, you can call this a don't do this or a doo-doo this. But I saw this headline, and I was actually genuinely, like, intrigued by the answer. Conflicted Jason Kelce reveals who he'll root for in the Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl. And I thought to myself, all right, well, I mean, your brother's playing in the game. You're not in the game. You're cheering for your brother, right? That would be the doo-doo this. Or is it more of a doo-doo this to have loyalty to your franchise, your team? You were an Eagle. You're going to, you know, probably be in the Eagles Hall of Fame at some point.
Yeah.
Do you cheer for your team over the blood loyalty of your brother?
That is a conundrum.
Can we hear the
That's
exchange?
A conundrum.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Got it. Right.
If the Chiefs play the Eagles in the Super Bowl next year, will Jason root for Travis?
So that's not
the question. It says, who will Jason root for? I will root for the Eagles, of course.
It's bull.
Because I will always be an Eagle.
Such bull.
First and foremost. Yeah.
All right.
I'll also root for Travis to have a good game, of course, because he's my brother. But no, I'll definitely be cheering on the Eagles.
Wow. Well,
there you go, Baber. Got what you asked for. Good luck to your Eagles.
That's the end of that question.
Can you do that, though? Can you root for another player to have a good game lose?
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time.
You do?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, you want Kirby Yates to have a good game, but the Dodgers are going to lose?
Sure. Yeah.
You're okay with that?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If he has a good game, they're more likely to win.
Not necessarily.
Travis Kelce.
As we mentioned, he's probably going to be their fifth inning guy. So somebody else can give it. Ryan Brazier can give it up later.
Jason Kelce puts you to the test. It's a 4-point game. Chiefs are down. Last play, like 5 seconds left in the red zone. Patrick Mahomes goes back to pass. Finds Travis Kelce wide open in the end zone. The ball is heading toward your brother. Catches it. He's the hero.
Yeah,
but the Chiefs
hero.
Win. Drops it. He's the GOAT. He's
right.
The new Mark Andrews, whatever. But your team wins. What are you really feeling? Do you want your brother to have that pain and agony
of
being the Super Bowl GOAT, or do you just want him to catch it and fine, the Chiefs win the game?
Yeah.
I don't care that much.
I think you're just like, holy crap, whatever happens, you're like, that was a crazy finish type of thing.
You never want your brother to go through that.
And then can I point out just one thing? Everyone's talking about Chiefs fatigue. And someone needs to beat the Chiefs. I don't care. I don't love the Eagles, but everyone seems to be rooting against the Chiefs. Isn't there more Jason Kelce fatigue than anything? I see him more than Travis Kelce. I see him more than Patrick Mahomes. He's on like every commercial. It's Jason Kelce this and Jason Kelce that all the time on my television. I think I have more Jason Kelce fatigue than anything else.
You're a big Chiefs fan lately.
Apparently, I'm the only person who doesn't mind the Kansas City Chiefs outside of Kansas City anymore.
You like dynasties, Dodgers.
I don't like dynasties.
Apparently, you do.
Lakers.
This is not angering me.
Chiefs, Dodgers,
Chiefs
Lakers.
Good.
Who else? Ohio State. You rooting for them next year?
I didn't see him in a Georgia football T-shirt.
That's like, it wouldn't be the worst thing if Ohio State repeated next year. Come on, man. No, I think you got to root for your brother always. Family first, yeah?
All right, so you're on a don't do this.
Yeah, I think it's a don't do this.
All right, that's don't and do this for a Wednesday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, we'll come back. We can talk some more Padres. If you want to talk a little bit more about the news on the lawsuit, we can get into that. We also have the Zips projections from our friend Dan Zimborski from FanGraphs that don't paint quite such a bleak picture of the Padres season coming up in 2025.
That little blurb that he put out yesterday, again, I saw a lot of people tweeting a bit of relief, you know, a bit of relief as to when they actually looked at it with projections. So we'll see. Here's a do this. You need to call QC Kinetics today. A don't do this would be to go through this entire year in pain again, pain in your joints, your knees, your hips, your shoulder, your back. For me, it was my hands, my wrists. Didn't know what was wrong with me. Was a little bit freaked out. Did not want to get wrist surgery at 46 years old. Didn't have to. Went to QC Kinetics. Groundbreaking treatments for arthritis pain, long-term relief. Now possible. Their regenerative treatments are sweeping the nation, and tens of thousands of QC Kinetics patients like me would tell you, don't wait. Make the call today. Talk to the local medical professionals. They have locations in Torrey Hills and Hillcrest for a free consultation. And listen, it can revitalize your joints, PRP treatments. You don't have to go under the knife. No drugs, no surgery, no downtime. You really won't miss a beat. Talk to a bunch of guys at Fantasy Camp about it. Hopefully QC Kinetics getting a lot of calls because, you're old and you start to fall apart a little bit. These guys can help keep you feeling young again, letting you do all the things that you love to do. So call them today, 619-614-PAIN, 619-614-PAIN. It's QC Kinetics, 619-614-PAIN.
Don't forget to download the Odyssey app and listen to 97.3 The Fan. On the app, for your chance at the ultimate trip in the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. All you have to do, download the Odyssey app, listen 1 hour a day to this station, and earn a daily entry into our national contest. The grand prize is travel and accommodations for a winner and three guests to Las Vegas, plus $5,000 for each person, $20,000 total, to fund the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball championship tournament. All you need to do is do what you're doing right now, listening to this station. You just have to do it on the app, the Odyssey app, which you can download very quickly.
Yes.
Let's talk about these Zips projections for the San Diego Padres. I need some good news. I felt like this was somewhat good news yesterday. Now, again, any projection model or system is inherently going to have some flaws. You can't, if you could just accurately project every single player, then there would be no need to play the games. And of course, that's why you play the games.
That's why you play the games.
That's why
cancel
you play
the
games. But I was looking at Dan Zimborski's sneak peek at his Zips projections, which is basically kind of like a WAR projection for each player, position group for a team. And the Padres, honestly, you know, came across pretty well. Their starting rotation at the top looks great. He has Dylan Cease at 3.8, Michael King at 3.9, Yu Darvish 2.2, Randy Vasquez at 1.3, Matt Waldron at 0.8. So that's a solid, you know, 12 WAR there from the starting pitchers. For the bullpen as a whole, 3.2 WAR, yeah, which is right there with other decent bullpens that I've seen comparisons to. And then in the position players, you've got Fernando Tatis Jr. leading the way with 5.9, Jackson Merrill at 4.8, Manny Machado 3.9, Xander Bogaerts 3.3, Luis Arraez and Jake Cronenworth at first at 2.0, and then you have your kind of the rest of your positions where you can improve. Second base, Cronenworth, Wade, Rosario 1.8, left field, Ornelas, Lockridge, Gonzalez 1.4, DH, Arraez, Rosario, etc. 1.1, and behind the plate, Campy, now Elias Diaz, 0.7. So those are kind of the four areas, the ones that we've been talking about, where the Padres could probably, at least projection-wise, improve the most. But when you combine it all, and I look at some of the other teams, they seem to match up with, you know, the non-Dodgers teams in baseball when it comes to their at least preseason projections statistically.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen them listed as high as fifth in power rankings and things like that. Again, I don't put a whole lot of stock into those. They're oftentimes wrong. They're oftentimes skewed. They're oftentimes, it feels like they're throwing darts at a board. But yeah, you look at it position-wise and you go, okay, like, is 7 out of 9 positions you feel okay about on the San Diego Padres, and better than okay. I think I think this is with a lot of teams. You hope Manny stays healthy. You hope Xander can find it. You know, you hope Crony is healthy and contributing. You hope Arraez is thumb. You know, and again with some of these guys, you hope they're here. You know, in the case of Luis Arraez, you hope he's here on the San Diego Padres. You look at the bullpen, and you're pretty excited about what you have in the bullpen. I mean, you really are. Like, it's been an area of strength for a while, and you're excited about what you have at the top of the rotation. The bottom of the rotation is suspect. It is, and that's not the case for 20 teams in baseball, 23 teams in baseball. I mean, a 4 and a 5, yeah, you'd love. Not everybody's going to have a chance, Benny, to put Yamamoto in the 4 or Shohei Ohtani in the 3. You know what I mean? Like, Dodgers notwithstanding, you feel good at least about your top 3 and your core of, call it 4 players. You know, you're like, okay, I can roll with that and fill in the depth pieces around them, some more supplementary parts, and adding another arm to the rotation would be insane.
I think one thing that stood out to me as I'm looking at, you know, other teams' projections. For instance, like the San Francisco Giants' projections. They got a, you know, their starters are right about the same at 12 WAR total with Webb, Ray, Harrison, Hicks, and then, you know, a platter of other options at the end. Their bullpen's at 3.8, so just a tick right above where the Padres stand. And then their lineup, even with the Padres pretty much like having nothing at left field right now, their outfield far outpaces almost every other outfield in baseball. Just with Fernando Tatis Jr. and Jackson Merrill's projections, you could put like literally zero WAR in left field, and the Padres are still going to have one of the best outfields in baseball just based on those two players alone. No one can really match up with what the Padres are putting in the outfield, and they don't really have a solution at all in left field yet.
So we found the zips from last year that Dan Szymborski did, and he had Machado. He had a mix at third base of Machado, Rosario, and Kemp, 4.1 WAR.
Manny, that was because of Manny
coming off surgery. Yeah. Bogarts and Kim at short, he had a 4.1. Kim and Cronenworth at second, 3.3. My point being, Ha-Sung Kim, you lose some more when he's not on your squad. First base, Cronenworth, Batten, and Carpenter. Was Carpenter on the team going into the season?
I don't think they had released him yet when the Zips came out.
Those Zips 24. From last year, they were before.
They still
the
had Soto. They had Soto,
it was
Grisham.
Early December.
Yeah.
But the biggest area of improvement has been in the bullpen. Last year, Benny, he had them as a 0.7 projection, and you still had Eniel De Los Santos, you had Steven Wilson, you had Ray Kerr, Alec Jacob, guys like that. The bullpen is much improved. Three more wins.
It's interesting because you think, well, the Padres' bullpen got worse. They lost Tanner Scott. He was such a key contributor. But if you go like year over year, look at the roster last January 29th for the San Diego Padres. I think it's pretty clear that the roster today is better than it was on January 29th.
Yes.
You have, obviously, Dylan Cease, Luis Arraez, Jason Adam, guys who weren't here a year ago that are...
Jackson Merrill.
We didn't know what he was, but, you know...
We did not know in January. It wasn't really even a thought that he would actually be the
starting
the center
fielder. Correct. I mean, you know, year over year, the Padres are actually in a much better place than they were going into last year's season.
Agreed. You have more clarity on... on some of your slots, center field being one of them. Michael King, I mean, that's another one. We didn't know what to expect from Michael King. Michael King is fantastic, man. Dylan Cease is a horse. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, we're talking about adding a fourth or fifth starter. You'd love to do it, but not at the expense of losing your number one or two starter,
now,
which is the rumor.
I don't see them making the kind of additions they did. There's no more Dylan Ceases and Luis Arraez out there, and even if there was, I don't know that you have the trade capital or the financial capital to add, you know, a player with a big salary or anything like that.
Yeah.
So they're more likely to have to go into the season looking more like they did on January 29th than they did last year when they still had a number of moves to make. I don't think they even had Jurickson signed on January 29th last year. I mean, year over year, this is an improvement from January 29th of last year.
Yeah,
but we're not comparing. We're comparing it to what they look like in September and October.
Right.
But January to January, the Padres are actually, I would say, quite a bit better than they were last year.
And, you know, you saw the move yesterday. If you missed it, they got Elias Diaz back, $3.5 million, one-year deal, I think, with an option for a second year, Ben. Okay, that's something. It's a sign of life. I don't know that it opens the floodgates for A.J. Preller right now to go out and make moves. But, again, it's going to be tough for me to swallow losing one of those guys at the top of the rotation. I understand it if it happens, but it doesn't mean I want it to happen. You're a better team with Cease and King at the top, certainly in a healthy Yu Darvish, than you would be trading Dylan Cease for a left fielder and a bottom of the rotation guy. I think
he's tried. Projection-wise, so Cease is, you know, projected for 3.9 WAR.
Yep.
Can you get a 2 WAR left fielder and a 2 WAR designated hitter for Dylan Cease? Because if you could, then theoretically your team would be better off by 0.1 WAR if you made that trade.
In
reality, does it play out that way? Mathematically, though, you know, projection-wise, there are ways that you could on paper make your team better by trading Dylan Cease. I can't tell you, though, that it'll actually pan out that way.
But
that's why you consider it right now.
You sure wouldn't help your rotation even a little.
No.
By trading Dylan Cease, you know. So that's kind of what it boils down to me. You can't win. You can't win without starting pitching. And if you lose one or two or one of the King or Cease at the top, it's going to be hard to stomach.
You know, I was thinking about it. There's been so much, pretty much negative speculation on what the roster is going to look like, what trades are going to happen. We haven't had a whole lot of positive things to discuss, predict, or anything like that heading into the next season. But how important of a season is this for Fernando Tatis Jr., who we assume is fully healthy, right? I mean, he was healthy
great.
In what, August? He was the leg injury.
Healthy-ish. I don't think he was 100% even in the playoffs. I think he was still limited by the stress reaction in his leg all the way through. But theoretically, with an offseason, that's something that should be completely healed at this point.
2023, played 141 games. That's the most he's ever played in one season. Is this the year we get 154 games out of Fernando and see what a real full season with a healthy Fernando Tatis Jr. looks like?
I mean, there's no way to predict it. Logic would tell you probably not. I mean, just based on how it's gone for
him
in his career.
You kind of need it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to have it.
This is something the Padres need badly. It's a full season of, you know, peak level Fernando Tatis Jr., which you're right, Paulie. We've never really seen that full season of peak Tatis
2021, by far his best season. He played in 130 games, 42 home runs, finished third in the MVP vote.
Yeah.
I mean, you add another 25 games to that, he could easily hit over 50 bombs.
Just having him on the field for 150, what he brings defensively,
insane.
It's insane. It's the dream.
It's kind of weird that we've never seen it.
Yeah, we need it. You know, this team needs it desperately.
All right, let's check traffic. We can get you updated. Obviously, there were some news items yesterday on the lawsuit involving Padres ownership, and I get you updated on where it all stands right after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So, of course, yesterday it was like during our final segment that Kevin Acey's story dropped on the response to Shiel Seidler's lawsuit.
Well,
from
walk me back through it.
Sure.
So the day before was
Monday.
It was Monday. Monday, there was an article that dropped from Kevin Acey. Then there was a supplemental piece with responses via email from Shiel.
So the Monday piece was essentially an email interview with Shiel Seidler,
okay,
where she kind of laid out some more of her arguments in the background of why she filed the lawsuit. The story from yesterday, that was the actual response legally. They had 3 weeks to respond to Shiel Seidler's lawsuit, and you know they filed in court their actual like rebuttal to what she had to say in her lawsuit, and that's what dropped yesterday, was the official rebuttal. We've still never really there's been no interviews with John or Robert or Matt Seidler. Robert and Matt are the ones in the lawsuit. John is the brother who's been named potential control person for the Padres. All I can tell you is our Adam Klug obtained the actual lawsuit and sent it to us. I read through the whole thing, the response by the brothers. And again, I don't know the actual facts of the case. These are arguments. Just like Shiel Seidler had her arguments, the brothers now have their arguments. And I don't know whether the facts will support their arguments. I can tell you that their arguments were very buttoned up. They had a response for everything. You know, it was all laid out very logically what they had to say. If the facts back that up, then I would say they have a very good case. If they don't, then obviously it's a completely different story. That's why all along I've been saying you can't really have a strong opinion on this. The facts of the case are.
It's weird because I was reading through Dennis Lynn's article in The Athletic yesterday. She is suing Matt and Bob, but not John.
Correct.
John will be allegedly named the control person.
Correct. Matt and Bob are
the trustees
of Peter's estate.
Okay.
So they're essentially the people. First it was Bob. Bob then stepped down, and Matt took over. He was the secondary, he was the vice trustee. So he became the trustee. So Matt's the one who
kind of like Kinsenda became the control person.
He was made the trustee of the estate. So he makes the decisions for all the assets that Peter left. He's the one who manages those. And his job is essentially to manage the estate, which includes the San Diego Padres, for the benefit of the beneficiaries, which are Shiel Seidler and the kids. You know, essentially, you know, he's supposed to run this. And then, you know, if that, you know, the estate assumingly makes money, then it pays out money to her so she can live her life. That's essentially kind of the crux of where this all starts. In the lawsuit, Sheil Seidler contends that they're mismanaging the estate.
Sure.
And they're not doing it the way Peter would have wanted and should have been doing it, including not naming her as the control person. They contend that that's not what Peter's wishes were, that they are managing it well and trying their best to, you know, take care of her the way Peter asked them to do it, and they're following all his wishes essentially to the letter. This is exactly what he wanted, and this is what they have argued in response. Obviously, both sides can't be completely true, but they can also be right from each's own perspective.
All right.
Yeah, you could.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. All right. Take a drink. Take a breather.
You know, you could just pick up and start talking when you see me.
I mean, you were on a roll, and I didn't know you were going to have an attack. So I
just need a little water.
I guess I'll say it is interesting how, because I read through that as well, the official response took me about an hour to read all 20 pages because I don't know any of the legal jargon.
Legalese is tough,
and
man.
It's even the words that you do know, you're like, I got to go read that again, make sure I'm processing it all right. How two people can read something and kind of view it totally different.
Yep, it's true. I mean, and then they countered, I guess Sheil's team countered with a statement yesterday. And again, it's just as ugly as it can get. I mean, it really is.
It was nasty. I felt disgusting after reading it all for, you know, about an hour yesterday afternoon. And I just go, this is awful.
I know it's a bit of a simpleton's take, but I'm a bit of a simpleton, so I'll wear it. At the end of the day, whoever controls the baseball team here, I think needs to have a big love for San Diego and the San Diego Padres. Is that too much to ask? That the person that is running this team has the best interests of the San Diego Padres and the fans of the San Diego Padres who have packed that ballpark 65 times last year and are rabid for your team. You have a love to win, to compete, and you love baseball. That's what I want.
I think, and that's been Sheil's argument, that
right.
You know, she has more of the connection with the team and the fans. She's been there with Peter, and she seems like she's the more logical person. I think on the brother's side, you could argue very logically, when Peter bought the Padres, he had no connection or love for the Padres at all. He was a lifelong Dodger. And then he abandoned the Dodgers and became, you know, a San Diego Padre legend, essentially.
As owning a team will make you.
Yeah. Now, the brothers can say, yeah, we're ready to do the same thing. Now that we're owning the Padres, we would like to be Padres through and through.
Have they said?
They haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
And part of it, I would imagine, is that this lawsuit is, you know, making it very difficult to publicly say anything at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and will that change or will it not? I don't know. Again, don't really know the brothers, and I'm waiting again to see how it all plays out and what facts come out when, you know, it gets decided in a courtroom. I think logically, obviously, Padres fans, you know, feel a little more of a connection to Sheil Seidler because they saw her, you know, at the games with Peter. Doesn't mean that she is necessarily going to be the better owner or that the brothers couldn't be a good owner. We just don't know any of that yet. So
there's really no way to tell.
There's no way to tell, which is why I am, again, remaining, you know, trying to remain fair and impartial and just wait on, you know, the outcome of this case decides.
And the fear is this dragging out till I'm 60 years old. That's the fear. And it's just being in flux every year.
So, you know, and I don't think this gets us any closer to a resolution.
I don't either.
An early step in the case. All right, we'll come back. Half of Ben and Woods still to go here on 97.3 The Fan. We'll be right back.